What a gentle way to wake up in the morning. I brought a friend with me today. His name is Ku, and I got him years ago in Hawaii, and he sits on the shelf near the window that I look outside of every morning. And if you saw this in the morning, I'm sure that it would help you to wake up also. Until the 1600s, and I'm talking about 2,000 years before that, Ku was the god of creation, and he was in tandem with a female god whose name was Hina, and Hina was the god of the moon. But then in the 1600s, the Tahitians came, and they took over the very calm and peaceful Hawaiian folks, and they turned the creator god into a war god. And truly, we've done that in our country, perhaps. And I just want to reflect a little bit on that with Ku. But today we're going to be talking about the place of refuge. In our opening words, they come from Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel. Our goal should be to live in radical amazement, to look at the world in a way that takes nothing for granted. Everything is phenomenal. Everything is incredible. To be spiritual is to be constantly amazed. One of my joys is Hal's chalice lighting, and I wanted to make sure that I memorized it and got to know it so that it would be a part of my DNA when I go home on Friday. But Hal, would you come and share our chalice lighting again?
So following our chalice lighting will be our morning song, Spirit of Life. So let's rise as we're willing and able. So I think I'll teach it to you one more time, and then tomorrow we'll sing it on our own. I go, then you go.
May our chalice shine all through our lives. 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 May our hearts be open.
May our hearts be open.
And may our minds be still.
May our minds be still.
May our truth be spoken. Lives fulfill this promise.
May our lives fulfill this promise.
This promise of peace.
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 And our opening hymn this morning is Spirit of Life. You'll find the words right there.
Our reading this morning is taken from our hymnal. It's My Help is in the Mountain by Nancy Wood. Tomorrow will be the 7th year of my coming to Summer Institute, and I was with the United Church of Christ for 25 years until noon on July 11th. And then I came to Summer Institute, and eventually was called by the Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Erie. And I am constantly wondrously amazed as to the readings that we have in our hymnal. That's why I wanted to share so many of them with you. Nancy Woods tells us, "My help is in the mountain, where I take myself to heal the earthly wounds that people give to me. I find a rock with sun on it, and a stream where the water runs gentle, and the trees which one by one give me company. So I must stay for a long time until I have grown from the rock, and the stream is running through me, and I cannot tell myself from one tall tree. Then I know that nothing touches me nor makes me run away. My help is in the mountain that I take away with me." The ancient Hawaiians who came by canoe 2,000 years before the Common Era, they built these huge temples which they called heiaus, They built them out of small boulders that had been jagged hunks of lava that were dumped into the sea and were pummeled by the shoreline for centuries after centuries. The kahunas, or the priests, would scout out the coastal lands and find large fields of these big stones. And they would pray to those stones and they would ask permission to take them to be used in making these heiau temples. And if they ascertained that the boulders agreed, they would ask for one more favor. Would you please leave half of your weight behind? Then the kahuna would send runners out to all the parts of the islands and gather the people, and they would stand shoulder to shoulder for miles and miles and miles from where the boulders were to where they were going to build the heiau. And they would pass the boulders person to person all the way along for miles and miles. From the seashore, up the mountain, down the other side, and then they would create these incredible platforms, sometimes much larger than 2 or 3 football fields. And if a boulder at any time should be dropped, it would be left there because apparently it was not willing to be used for the temple. On the island of Molokai, these boulders were passed from person to person to person for 8 arduous miles, an incredible community building activity. Now, Molokai's most famous and oldest heiau was 920 feet long. It was called Ilioiliopai. And it was built up on 4 different terraces or stone walls. And my wife Denise and I, we walked into the mountain about 2 miles to be able to see this incredible phenomenon. And it was covered with jungle. And there was a sign that said that it was a kapu or a taboo or a prohibition for walking on top of it, because it was sacred space. And we brought an offering of kukui nuts. This is from the candle nut tree to be given there. The candle nut tree or the kukui nut is, they would take these and they could put them on a string and they could start to burn them at the bottom, and there's enough fat in there that they would continue to glow into the night. A very curious kind of chalice. Many of these heiaus or temples were designated as places of refuge. And the most famous place of refuge was on the big island of Hawaii. We went to the big island to study indigenous religion, and we were in awe of the magnitude and the magnanimity of these ancient Hawaiians. Our Hawaiian guide was dressed in a breechcloth and also was covered with a grass shawl. And that person was also a park ranger, but he was a native Hawaiian, and he explained the meaning of these sacred places. First, he taught us that we shouldn't call it the place of refuge because that's the English name. He said the proper name is Pu'u Honua o Hanauna. And my wife, of course, she can understand that and she can say that so easily and so well. And she can even pronounce it totally correctly. But this particular heiau on the Kona coast was called Hale a Kiawe, the House of Kiawe. And it has become a national park for the world to be able to come and understand this concept of the place of refuge. From the 16th century to 1819, the Hawaiians acquired the Kapu religion. And that was because of the Tahitian conquerors who came, who turned the god Ku from a creator god into a god of war. And they brought their own gods, Kanaloa and Lono, and the other one I can't remember. But the Tahitian Alihi also set up a system of kapu, or taboo, or prohibitions. And it's almost like putting your silverware on your tray and letting it go through the dish line. Every single thing had its kapu, or its restriction. And the tragedy was that the punishment for infraction was capital punishment. And so there were so many restrictions, and everything was strictly governed. But there was one way to save your life. It would be somehow to escape and to go to these places of refuge and be absolved by the priest. Now, this particular one on the big island was called Haleakeake, and it was surrounded on three sides by water. And you had to swim to get there, and there were sharks in the water. Now, I imagine that Mark Spitz and those new Olympic swimmers could make it, but I'm not so sure about myself. And then also in times of war, whole villages of women and children would seek refuge in these heiaus on all the different islands. You know, myself, after 32 years of ministry, I finally got this sabbatical that became so important for me to re-energize for the last 3 years of my time. And so we went to the Big Island and Maui, and also to Lanai, and also to Molokai. And on each island, we visited not only the sacred heiaus, but also the rocks and the trees and the mountains and the shorelines. And we spent one whole month in one small cottage on a beach that was 90% ours on Molokai. And we had a neighbor whose name was Ed. And at first I called him Brudda Ed, because that was the Hawaiian pigeon. That was the familiar. But as I got to know Ed, one day I called him Uncle. I called him Uncle Ed. Now, Uncle and Auntie are terms of respect. They are titles of honor. And at that moment, Ed stood up straighter, and he had about him a sense of being that I had not known before in the few weeks that I had known him. I had extended to him the same peerage, the same relationship as I had given to myself, and he felt that kind of inherent worth and dignity with this Howley, who was his neighbor. Uncle Ed showed me how to shuck a coconut on a stick. Uncle Ed and his small family, they lived in an extended shack. It was just shack after shack after shack, all tied together, with an emu, a place where they could cook their pigs for their luaus. He explained, and they have a special word for the mountain and also the sea. And if anything is the Makai, it is the sea. And if it is to the mountain, it is the Maka. And it's very important for you to realize that on small islands, these two places, because that's how you orient. He said from the Maka, he got deer and wild pig. And one day I saw him put his net into the ocean and pull out lots of fish and single-handedly go down and grab an octopus and bring it out, and that was going to be his breakfast and his dinner for the day. Uncle Ed showered us with bananas and mangoes and papayas. And all these things he shared with us. And I've never seen such sustainability in my life. Uncle Ed also told me about the Menahuni. These were those folklore type leprechauns, only they were Hawaiian. Menahuni is made up of two words, mana or power, which is spiritual power. That's what resides within each individual. And huni means small. So Menahuni were people of small power. But since people couldn't remember who built these monstrous high heiaus or the irrigation ditches for the farming, or the huge fish ponds that would go out into the lagoons, out into the ocean, they forgot who had made them over the centuries, and they decided that it must have been the Menahuni. And it must have been at night, because the aristocratic alihi would force you to work in the daytime. And they must not have consumed very much, because they were very small. And they were very humble, so they worked for a wage of one shrimp per night. The Menahuni were not legendary to Uncle Ed. He said he could hear them at different times marching through the woods along the stream by his shack. And he said that the reason that that new mansion house that was built down at the shore had a huge crack in the concrete floor was because they had built it in the path of the march of the Menahuni. Now, you don't have to believe that story. But the night after we visited that very sacred heiau in our neighborhood, there were three huge blasts of thunder, but absolutely no lightning. It was an awesome phenomenon. And our neighbors, we commented to them, and they said they too had heard it and how unusual it was. And my wife and I said, we did not violate the kapu when we went there. We just laid our kukui nuts there, but we did not step upon that sacred ground. But there was a response to our being there. Another friend, Lono, took us in his truck through all of his boyhood haunts when his father was the foreman of the Molokai Ranch. He took us to Whispering Rock, where Hawaiians for centuries would go to this huge boulder and have incredible psychotherapy sessions with the rock. He took us to the hillside on a calm day when he called the name of the special wind that inhabited that part of the island. And it came on strong. And he explained to us that that's where he brought his fiancée when he wanted to ask her to marry him. But he needed a witness. And so he called the wind to be a witness, and it came on strong. And his bride-to-be just beamed to realize the communion that her to-be husband had with nature. We think that such stories are poppycock. But a motorcyclist with the wind in their face, they know what I'm talking about. We pamper ourselves with air conditioning and non-perspiring deodorant. We forget what heat and sweat is. We stay inside in the snow and the storm. We even watch television in our cars when we're not driving. And, you know, those of us of a certain generation, we miss the sights of those long ago Sunday rides. Is it because we're afraid to look out the windows and see those animals that have been destroyed on the road? How ironic that is, because we do not have a problem of stopping at the next McDonald's and having a hamburger. Before I get too gory, I'd better end with a good story. In Erie, Pennsylvania, I tell my congregation, on a Sunday, you have two choices to be spiritual. One is to come to our Sunday service, and the other is to go to Presque Isle State Park. Most of them call it the peninsula, and to commune with nature. Either one is viable and legitimate because they've already paid their pledge. One wonderful person from our congregation who died last year was Jean Stahl Cunningham. She was a famous nature artist and a bird watcher. She is the one who created the atlas for the bird migrations across North America. An incredible woman. And the Stahl Nature Center on Presque Isle was named after her. The true story goes that on a rainy day, during monarch butterfly migration, when the monarchs crossed Lake Erie from Canada and worked their way down to Mexico, that Jean Stahl Cunningham was there on the beach, and she took off her jacket and she let those wet, tired monarch butterflies land on her, and she stood still and let her body heat warm them and give them a safe refuge, a resting place. And finally, when their wings were dry and they were ready to go, they would fly away 2,000 miles down to Mexico. The day of Jean's calling hours at the funeral home, I came home very sad. She had been such a good friend for me. And next to my front door, I have these huge hibiscus trees that I take in all winter long. And when I bring them outside, they just burst with flowers. I even have a plumeria tree that's beginning to bloom this year. For about four times, I brought back plumeria sticks from Hawaii. They never worked. I went to Puerto Rico, and somehow I just grabbed a piece off of a tree and put it in my suitcase, got it through customs, and brought it home. And it's about this high now, and it has a crown that's ready to sprout these plumeria flowers. But anyway, this particular hibiscus tree, I was very, very sad. And it was full of flowers. But as I walked by it, I looked, and the closest flower to me had a tiny little brown and yellow feather stuck right to the pistil. The pistil is the female part of the flower. Just remember, pistil packing mama. And I thought, this is Jean. She is expressing herself to me, or else I am seeing her in nature. It doesn't matter. But when I saw her widowed husband, Toby, I told him this story about seeing this flower and seeing this feather. And he said, yep, that's my Jean for sure. Nature is a spiritual refuge for us all. And so let it always be. Mahalo. I've got an old song with new words, and as I told you that my transition from the Christian denomination to the Unitarian Universalist folks took place over the course of 4 hours from me traveling from there to here. But also, I've looked at some of those old songs and said there's some value there, and some of the training that I had was very important to implement in my new place. But this is a song that goes back, and it's called This Is My Father's World, but I've kind of changed the world to This Is Our Gaia World. And I hope that Cliff has it up for us here. And this is a brand new song for Hal Dixler. And so we'll see if we can't work this through. I'd like the choir to divide in two, and some of you look over this way and some of you look over that way. Okay? Why don't we try that? Because I'm going to need your help. But Hal, if you could run that through one time first, just the music, and then the choir is going to lead us in this particular song. So make sure that you can see it. Please be seated. I hope that you've mulled over yesterday's questions. I'd love to give you a couple more. I can't wait for the mockingbird to come out and mock me, though, all right? What I need to tell you is that these are not my questions. They come directly from that book, Last Child in the Woods by Richard Love. So I don't hold me that accountable. But for the youth, what if a tree fell in the forest and no one knew its name? Would it still exist? And for the adults, what if instead of sailing to the Galapagos Islands and getting his hands dirty and his feet wet, Charles Darwin had spent his days cooped up in an office staring at a computer screen? Our closing words are from Thich Nhat Hanh. Water flows from high in the mountains. Water runs deep in the earth. Miraculously, water comes to us and sustains all life. water and sun green these plants. When the rain of compassion falls, even a desert becomes an immense green ocean. So let it always be. Thank you. And now it's time for those SI opportunities.
There will always be announcements in the morn. There will always be announcements in the eve. In between those will be workshops, food, some laughter, spirits, swimming, maybe napping, but announcements will go on. Do we have Violet Carey or Karen Moore here by any chance? This is a missing wristband. They should have extras in the children's program to replace it.
How about any hypos? Hypo. These were found in the balcony. Back here.
Thank you. Oh, together. Sunglasses were found on stage.
Balcony.
Found in the balcony, which is sometimes like a stage. Is William Lang here this morning? Hi, how are you? We heard something about you. I heard you lost a fang. Congratulations. There's going to be a contra dance tonight at 6:30 in the pub. No experience necessary. All dances will be taught by caller Susan English. Susan was not able to be here last year with us, but she's done contra dancing with us before, so come and have fun. Live music will be provided by our own Strings Set Me Free band. You don't need a partner, but bring a friend, or two, or three. Is there a notary in the house by any chance? Anyone?
Yes.
Connect with Michelle Buchheit after the service, if you would. Thank you. All right, this is a special announcement for young adults. Are you looking for opportunities to develop your leadership skills? Do you want more leadership credibility with the older members of your congregation? Would you like a glow-in-the-dark chalice tattoo? You can meet with Reverend Renee, the UUA Regional Leadership Development Consultant. Woo! There, that's the glow-in-the-dark tattoo. To find out more, Wednesday at 12:45 in the Great Hall in Pierce, during lunch. Let's make sure I didn't miss them. Youth Vespers is going to meet tonight at 10:01 p.m. on the steps outside Ross Hall. And last but not least, a note about golf carts. This is just a reminder. Our shuttle drivers are working really hard to provide priority access to members of our community with accessibility and mobility concerns. And this means the drivers have schedules and the drivers have routes, and they are doing their very best to take care of people who really need the assistance. When a seat is free, we are happy to transport whoever would like to go somewhere. But this means that sometimes we'll ask you to give up your spot when we need to take care of someone who needs a little more support. So think about that. This sometimes means that we might ask you to get off the cart. It also means sometimes if you're traveling with someone who needs help and we encounter someone else who could use a little help, we might ask you to walk and meet up with them. So thank you for keeping that in mind. And that's all I have for you. That's really all I have for you. Awesome.